to Not So Live from Asteroid G, going off on a boat adventure and never coming back. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy Mike the Ghoul, just taking a road trip with his pals for 20 years and coming back home. We're going to talk a little bit about the new Christopher Nolan film, The Odyssey. Maybe you've heard of it? Question mark?
Can you consider it a successful road trip with buddies if you're the only one that comes back?
I mean, no, but...
No!
I mean, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey.
Could you just imagine the wives and girlfriends that would be upset if you went off with five guys to go tailgate a football game, come back 20 years later, and you're the only dude left?
Like, I definitely have some splaining to do.
There is a story there.
In the age of social media.
So yes, Christopher Nolan has put out The Odyssey, which is actually, I was thinking about it right before we did the podcast. It's like the third film in a trilogy that feels like he keeps doing weird little trilogies. Like he did the Batman movies. And then in and around the Batman movies, he then did his sci-fi auteur trilogy of The Prestige and Inception and Tenet. And that's where he kind of got that name for blockbusters. And then it's like he almost hated the idea that he was making blockbusters, although he kept making blockbusters. He just decided to go make historical blockbusters of Dunkirk and Oppenheimer and The Odyssey. And it's not like he's chasing being an auteur director. Everyone acknowledges he's an auteur director. But it's like the further he's gone down this path, the less I've actually cared about his movies.
I think that's a fair critique in the realm of like giving a shit about the movie or not. Like you in the Batman movies, like there was some stakes, there was some attachment, you know, there was some buildup, you know, and his movies, like by no means am I saying this was bad. I love the shit out of it. But I can understand what you mean about it just being like a telling of something we know already, just Christopher Nolan's version of it. Like, I get that.
It is. And because it's the Christopher Nolan version of it, it's 3 hours and kind of muddy and goes on longer than it needs to. And it's not like I'm saying the movie is bad. There's a lot of good stuff going on in this. But watching the movie, we got to a really good climactic point about halfway in, and I'm like, okay, we should be rearing up for the end now, maybe half an hour left. And I looked at my phone, I'm like, oh my god, there's still an hour and a half to this film.
Yeah.
Like, I get what he's going for, but I also got the vibe that because he wrote the script, he's sitting there going, all of my words are important and none of them can be cut. And so it's all right there on the screen.
See, like, I feel like there was maybe just a part of him, though, that was like, I really want to push the boundaries of IMAX capability, because literally this is 7 minutes less than an IMAX movie is even capable of producing. Like, I think it's 3 hours is the most.
Right up to the edge of what the reels can handle.
Yeah, right to the edge. And I feel like that was the whole point, because, like, there.
God.
It does drag at times. I'll give you that. There's a lot of, like, one-note Matt Damon throughout it, too, for better or worse. That's just his character. And he doesn't do a bad job at it. It's not like Matt Damon didn't bring it. He kicked ass. But, like, he doesn't have, like, any growth till the end of the movie. And this is kind of like the ultimate hero's journey, I guess, in a way, you know? Like,
you learn something, you come back.
Yeah. And he learned a hell of a lot being away for 20 years, you know, spoiler alert. But, like, I get what you're saying. Before we continue talking about this epic masterpiece, I'd like to talk a little bit about another masterpiece, and that is our sponsor this week, Zorin Industries. In a world where tomorrow belongs to those bold enough to build it, Zorin Industries is redefining what is possible. From cutting-edge microelectronics to advanced energy research and industrial innovation, every breakthrough is engineered with one goal, staying ahead of the competition. While others see limits, Zorin Industries sees opportunity, precision, performance, and progress. For visionaries who refuse to settle for second place, there's only one name worth remembering: Zorin Industries, engineering tomorrow, today. Thank you this week to our sponsor.
The Odyssey. For those that are unfamiliar, although I think just about every single one of us has been forced to read this in college or high school at one point or another. At least
everybody knows this in some shape or form.
Parts of it, anyway. Odysseus is the king of a Greek island who then has to go off and fight a war for the king that he serves, because, you know, there's various tiers of kings. It's like a cup pyramid of kings.
It's the original pyramid.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, but not Egyptian. And so he goes off to the war with Troy because they steal King Agamemnon's brother's wife, Menelaus's wife, Helen of Troy, because Menelaus wants his queen back, and Agamemnon wants to break the stranglehold that Troy has on the trade of the region, which I assume the region, quote unquote, is the Mediterranean Sea, because I have to think that. But besides the point, that's way beyond anything the scope of the movie is trying to tell us right now.
I know in the original, well, not original, but the one everybody else knows about this, the movie Troy from like 20 years ago, Agamemnon says he wants to control the Aegean Sea. So we're in that like Mediterranean realm. Like,
it's very obtuse.
Like, that's the only reference I can remember where they reference something, but you're in that general area.
Yeah, that general area. Yeah, so the Aegean Sea that comes off into the Mediterranean Sea. So if you control the trade route there between the two of them, then you have a whole lot. And it, which is funny when you think about it, because after they're done sacking Troy and taking it over via the power of a wooden horse, they then sail home. And if it's not the Mediterranean Sea they're sailing on, if it's the Aegean Sea, that's even smaller. So how the fuck did he get lost for 20 years? Which is what happens, is that it's the telling, A, of Odysseus's journey with his men, most of whom don't come back, across the sea to get home to his wife. And then it's her story 20 years later of her at home wishing that her husband would come home because there are a bunch of suitors that are going to kill her son and take over the kingdom otherwise.
Odysseus with the original, I got a shortcut in mind, let's go.
Yeah, I'm not going to follow the king back home, even though he's following a normal trade route and will be able to get home eventually. We're going to go our own way because I'm tired of following him. He's the dad with the steering wheel going, I don't need a map, don't ask for directions, I've got this.
Yep, exactly to a T.
And so he sails across the sea and...
Hijinks ensue.
Hijinks ensue, yeah. Deals with Cyclops, deals with sirens, has to deal with the whirlpool Charybdis, and still is the weird snaky thing. There's some giants that they fight at one point that wreck two of the three ships. Like, shit happens. At a certain point, and I've complained about this before, this is a and-then movie. And then they go to a new island, and shit happens. And then they go to a new island, and shit happens. And the problem with this is like... The main middle chunk of the movie is the and-thens, and it's not like Odysseus actually learns anything from the and-thens. It's just shit happens, men die, oops.
He kind of learns a little bit, you know, at the end there. When
at the end.
The witch Cersei, but like the whole time he's just like, nah, man, we're good. Let's just keep going. And the men are like, I don't know about this. He's like, nah, we're good. Let's just keep going.
Nah, there's a rest area up ahead, kids. Just hold it. We're fine.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I got this. So like this whole like thing. And then like that's when he starts to like get the change a little bit. You know, the Matt Damon starts to kind of have that character development.
Because
then the guilt starts coming out about, like, you know, what he's actually done in the past and, like, you know, watching his men now die around him. Like, this is where he starts to be a bit of a character and it starts growing. But if you've gotten to that point of the movie, bored as shit, or just, like, it's almost a little late in the movie to have that happen.
Yes, and that's the thing. The opening chunk around Troy, it's thrilling. I'm like, couldn't we have just seen Nolan give us a 1 hour rendition of Troy? Like, I would love that. And the last act where he's at home, the last, 40 minutes or
45
so?
45 minutes or so,
That's thrilling, too. He's finally there. He's accomplishing the thing that the plot's been building to for 2 hours and 15 minutes. It's great. That middle chunk of an hour and a half is just a slog.
It does start getting to that point. Yeah.
And then he goes here and people die. And then he goes here and people die. And I'm like, it would matter more to me if we gave a shit about any of the sailors that were dying. But we barely know anyone beyond Matt Damon. And as you've pointed out, he's a bare sketch of a character to begin with.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, you know, just follow your leader kind of thing. Like his second in command, Eurylochus is the only guy that really challenges him. Mm-hmm. And that's weak at best. But like, I get it. Like, you got to follow your leader. Like, that's the world that they're in. So
and it would be better if Eurylochus was charismatic and really a solid leader in his own right and started challenging and got character development so that the two of them could contrast against each other. It's less interesting when Eurylochus is just kind of this dude who's like, yay. But then all of the soldiers are just kind of dudes. It's like when we watch a slasher movie and 30 or 40 people die, the body count's too high and I don't care.
Right. Yeah, it starts getting to that point. Like, I don't have attachment to any of these people.
No.
They're fodder to feed the machine of the movie. And, like, it was funny, too, because, like, they get in and out of so many circumstances and situations along the way that, like, I'm thinking, like, how are they going to end up with, like, so few people left? And then when that happens, I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
That's how they're going to do that. They're just going to lose their entire fleet. That'll make sense.
I kind of almost wish it was a Monty Python version of this, because at least every time they get into trouble and they go, run away! It would be funny at that. And there'd be clopping of, like, coconuts and shit. It'd be hilarious. Yeah. This is played straight, and at a certain point, my brain just shut off. Like, yeah, the Cyclops kills some. That's the first time they run into trouble. That works. The Giants kill most of them, and that feels like a turning point. But then there's just a bunch of other times where they're just sailing around. I'm like, can we cut 15, 20 minutes off of this journey? Because I'm sitting there going, 20 years feels way too long.
I know. And, like, it's kind of scary to think about, because, like, I wonder what the Nolan cut of is. But, like, literally, this is the limit. This is our Nolan cut.
This is the Nolan cut. Yes. I almost wish that Universal had stepped in. It's like, can you do a 2-hour and 15-minute version? Just for fuck's sake, you know?
Yeah, and maybe there's somewhere on the cutting room floor where that happened, because, like, this was literally, like, the movie itself, upon being impressive, had just a lot of impressive, like, things around it. Like, it was all cut and put together by hand. Like, they didn't do, you know, they went old-fashioned with that. There was so many practical effects in the movie. Like, the Cyclops is a practical dummy. Like, yeah, they CGI'd it to smooth it out, but that's not all CGI. Like, that's a puppeteer, which is pretty cool. With the giants that are there that kill the majority of the party, like, that's actually, like, 7-foot-tall people, and they have smaller stand-in stunt doubles there for the soldiers. Exactly. Like, there's a lot of good stuff here. When there is some CGI that, like, and you probably know what I'm talking about, where they're like, where you don't get a really good look at the monster. You can say, maybe that looks cool, but they give you that little, like, I can't show you all of it thing and make you think it was still cool. Makes you think that it probably looked pretty shitty.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And to end up in the final cut of a movie, like, they did it very well, but, like, I'd love to see that part of the movie slow down a little bit and see, like, get a good look at that monster, because I still can't really clock what it looked like.
Yeah. It's this thing where I already know that Christopher Nolan can do solid practical effects. I already know he can do fantastic. Well, okay. I would say staging of fantastic action sequences. I actually think that his directing and editing of action sequences sucks. Sucks real ass. Every time the movie had to switch over to an action sequence, it got choppy and over-edited. And I'm like, can we just do the thing where you set the camera down and let it sit for a little while? Because you do that with the characters talking, and it's great. But then you switch to, like, 7-foot-tall giants attacking people, and I have no clue what the hell's going on at all at this point. It's... But yeah, no, he's proven he can handle big budget, and that he can handle historical epics, because Dunkirk and Oppenheimer, he's shown he knows how to do period pieces. This is a mythological period piece, but it's still a period piece, and it doesn't really push him outside of his bounds. So it's not like it's a bad movie, but I've seen this before from Nolan.
Right. It's just, this is, like, it's going to be successful, but this is a movie that, like, if you like this kind of shit, like, you're into, like, Greek mythology and the whole Trojan War kind of stuff, like, you'll love this. But if you just like Nolan for Nolan, you're going to be like, okay, like you said, I've seen that before,
I've seen it before.
And that's not a dig at it not being good. It's just the facts.
It's not nearly, I don't want to be cruel and say it's not nearly as smart as it thinks it is, but it's definitely not nearly as twisty as I think Nolan was trying for. Because when he's building the movies really well, like The Prestige or Inception, there's a lot of twistiness to it. Like, his initial movie, Memento, is a very twisty movie. Insomnia, not so much, but I actually like Insomnia. But, like, Memento is a very twisty movie that keeps you guessing about what's going on, even from scene to scene. That's the auteur in him going, I can do something really cool. The Odyssey feels like, because of one specific plot point that I'm not going to spoil because the movie's still in theaters, it's trying to build a twist around what's going on with his character that illuminates who he is and why he's been on this journey, which works on its own right, but it doesn't have the same impact in the story the way the twists of The Prestige did, or how the various layers of Inception worked together. This is a very linear movie that tells itself out of order when it doesn't need to.
I get what you're saying there. Yeah, I did really enjoy, and again, like you said, not going to spoil because it is still in theory, there is a twist at the end, and, like, I was like, wow, okay, so I didn't see that coming.
A little bit,
You know, and like, that was pretty cool.
I also feel like, despite how good the production is, the actors kind of suck.
Oh, this is a tough one, right? Because, like, there was so much controversy around this movie for some of the casting choices.
Not the casting choices.
But I mean, like, to your point, like, they're not in the movie enough to really, like, weren't being in the
and
movie.
They're not the ones I had a problem with. Lupita Nyong'o, yeah. I feel like for her small roles that she has, she's phenomenal. And I actually thought Elliot Page as Sinan, the young soldier that gets dragged off to the war with Odysseus, they don't have a lot of time on screen, but they're good in the role. Neither of them were a problem with it. I think the problem is all the main actors are just not in this movie. Like, Matt Damon is flat for most of the movie. Anne Hathaway barely gets anything to do, and I barely ever feel her character. Robert Pattinson is a sniveling little weasel. Hold on. Mm-hmm. And he's good at being a sniveling little weasel, but he doesn't have that villain energy the way I want from a villain.
I get that.
He's too weaselly and not enough of anything. Not enough to the point that I'm sitting there going, I understand why all these dudes are following you. He's just snivelly weasel.
Get that feel at the end. Yeah. Why are they listening to him? That did come across my mind. No. So, fair point. Fair point.
Tom Holland should not be trusted with drama at all. He's good for superheroes and being a light, bouncy dude, but every time I've seen him in dramas, especially him here as Odysseus' son, he blows so hard. I was so unimpressed. I love John Leguizamo, but he gets to be a character, not like a main player. I thought John Bernthal was good for what he does, but he was horribly miscast because I couldn't not see the Punisher the whole time, and I feel bad about that.
That was tough.
Yeah, but like he's got this like gritty New York thug thing. It's like anytime you try and put Jason Statham in a movie where he's not playing a hitter, he just feels wrong. It felt wrong to see John Bernthal in this role. Like, it just didn't work. And Charlize Theron is wasted in this movie. She's just wasted in this movie.
Gosh, you are being a little harsh here, but like,
I'm sorry.
I
didn't feel it from any of these. The production was great, but I wanted more from the characters. And if the script's not there, and who knows how it read on the page, then the actors have to bring it. And some of them did, and some of them really didn't.
I mean, fair criticism. And I think that was the point I was trying to get at. If you like Matt Damon, just period, you're going to love this movie because it's literally all Matt Damon. You don't get a lot of these other characters. You get like combined like 10 minutes of some of these characters.
Yeah.
And it's Tom Holland and Anne Hathaway are huge parts and they're not on the screen a whole lot.
No.
But when Tom Holland is, like, I get what you're saying there.
The performance that Tom Holland give would have been better in other situations. Yeah. But I think the big problem I have with Tom Holland is that, okay, the dude is at this point 30. And he's supposed to be playing a dude that is at best 24. And he is acting like he's playing a sniveling kid at 18 when he looks 30. Like, Tom Holland no longer looks like a kid. He looks 30 now. So when I see him in this movie, I can't invest in him the way I did when he was early 20s playing a high schooler. It doesn't have the same vibe. Tom Holland of 10 years ago, I would buy in this role. Tom Holland of now does not bring the presence he needs to this performance. Anne Hathaway is a fantastic actress. I am not one of those people that hates on Anne Hathaway. I've seen her in a lot of stuff. I think she's great. Unfortunately, this movie wastes her so that she doesn't have a lot to do. So the few times that she can act, it feels almost out of place.
Interesting. So, I thought that when she did have like her moments and she did bring that emotion, I felt like I was like, well, damn, like I felt something with her. Like, I understood, like, you know, she just wants her king back. Like, I get it. So interesting. You didn't get that. Like,
no, I didn't get that vibe.
I felt that a little bit from her. Yeah. Interesting.
So
I mean, that's why it's a movie, though, right? People are going to have different opinions and feel different things.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yes. I get what you're saying. I see. But I got it the other way. So interesting.
It's fair. But no, it's like there's a lot that I could point to and go, this is good for a movie at a certain length. I thought they were done really well. But this is a 3-hour movie that I can't say is bad, but I don't ever think I'm going to want to watch again.
I think that's fair. Like, it's a very long watch. Like, I mean, I think of other movies like this length, like The Hateful Eight was, I think, even longer than this. And that was a fantastic movie, but like Once was good. Yeah. So I kind of think that a lot of people will get that feel from this too. It's not something you could just throw on and just leave on. Like, you got to, this is committing to like the length of two normal movies at times.
Yeah. And it's not anywhere near as energetic or interesting to me as like the Lord of the Rings movies, which is another huge fantasy epic that people would go back and watch again. This is one slog of a movie that was done really well, but much like Oppenheimer and much like Dunkirk, I've seen it. I can't argue with the idea that it was a good movie. Will I ever watch any of those again? No, Not like I've gone back and watched The Prestige over and over again, or even watched Inception a couple times, and the Batman movies. I mean, the first two especially, I'm like, oh, come on, No, this is a good enough movie that continues to prove that Nolan is an auteur director. Do I wish he had an editor that would rein him in some? My God, yes, I do.
Fair point. But I mean, I guess he's kind of like, you know, clearly earned the right here to be artistic when he wants to be artistic.
He can do what he wants. Yep.
This is not something like, maybe I'll end up watching this again at some point, but like, I would go back and watch Lord of the Rings, or I do go back and watch Batman, and that is a Nolan film. So I guess it's just like, it's some good range as a director too. Like, you could do really great movies that like people love to watch again many times. Then you could also do really great movies that are just a good watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's great if you see it in the theater. It's fine. I think if I hadn't watched it with you for the podcast, I probably would have watched it at home and, again, been perfectly fine with it. I did that for both Dunkirk and Oppenheimer, and while they were good, I liked the fact that I could watch them at home and take a pee break once in a while. You know, the bathroom calls at some point, like, man, can I make it 3 hours? Damn. But, like, this one pushes the bounds of how much time I want to spend in a theater. This was at the upper range, and it was like, that's a bit much for me, but it was fine. But I don't, I'm not sitting there going, man, I really got to own this movie. This is a huge epic. That's going to be a shining beacon of my collection. It was fine.
Yeah. And that's fair. And that's totally fair. I probably wouldn't own this either, just because, you know, I really pick and choose my physical media too. But like, I own The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises and you know, like all these other, you know, Nolan films. Like, I have Inception, but like, this isn't one I would have. And that's fine. That's fine. It does what it does, and it does it very well. But yeah, definitely maybe invest in an adult diaper if you go to sit in the theater. I mean, it's definitely a long movie.
It's very long. Anyway, I'm happy Christopher Nolan gets to keep making the movies he wants to make. Doesn't mean I'm going to want to see them. This one was just on the edge of, was that good enough? It's no Tenet, which was terrible, but it's definitely not like a Prestige where I'm going to be watching this over and over again. Anyway, no, Odyssey is fine. If you feel the need to go see a Greek epic done by Christopher Nolan, you could do, well, you can't do anything else, and this one's pretty good. So, it is what it is. You have to like Nolan, you have to want to see a Greek epic, and you have to want to sit in the movie for 3 hours. If you want to do all that, you'll probably have a fine time. Will you care to see it again afterwards? I kind of doubt it.
It depends on your love and lore for Trojan and Greek history, you know. Then maybe you'll see it again. I think maybe I've watched Troy one or two other times over the last 20 years, but like, even that's just... I will say, I did see this in IMAX. I'm curious to know, like, I hear a lot of divide of people who got to see it in IMAX versus people who didn't get to see it in IMAX because, like, the screens weren't as wide and things were squished together. Mm-hmm. So, like, I haven't heard a whole lot of complaints about that.
Seemed fine to me.
Since the movie's come out. So you said that to me, that you seem fine to you.
Yeah. I see it in my shitty little regional theater that only has three screens and they all suck. And the movie looked fine and sounded fine to me. It was great. It was a movie.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because like, I've heard that being a dividing point. Like, this movie's made only for the people that can go see it in IMAX. I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I live 5-10 minutes from an IMAX, but not everybody does. So,
you know. Yeah. And, you know, it's credit where it's due. Chris Nolan made the movie he wanted to make. Only Christopher Nolan could release a Swords and Sandals epic at this point and have it be a box office success. He did the job. Please, Nolan, go make something else next time.
let's go back to a little more substance and story than just telling of an epic. You know, you've done that. Try something else.
We did three of them. You've completed this trilogy. Find something else to explore now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, good movie, worth a watch. That's our choice.
That's what we think. This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, building our own wooden horse to hide in. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Your buddy Mike the Cool going to make sure he goes and charges his GPS because he's not going to get lost like these assholes.
We will see you all next time, and not just after 20 years.
Yeah, no.